does get real. When real guys come, real sports, we will raise market game changes. Does get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Third guys, you just gotta recognize I gotta pay the money, I gotta keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We're not gonna make it. Sometimes you gotta create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron's kids.
I do have a game problem with execution. Right?
He burned it. A lot of bridges. He's gonna be hated in Chicago. He's gonna be hated in Cleveland. He's gonna be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's gonna be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play it. All right, welcome to the Real Sports Guys. Real guys talking real sports. Your man Mark the Game Changer. Welcoming you in. Jump on, get on when you get an opportunity. Feel free to call in. This is Renegade Radio. We keep it realer than real here. We got D Wheels on the line.
That's right.
Here, man, talk to the people.
Hey, welcome to another crazy moment in sports history. We're at the Real Sports Guys. We got some crazy stuff we're going to talk about tonight. So I'm excited. Call on in. Get around the table with us.
Yeah, call in. If you want to call in and jump around the table, do your deck of cards, do your hand, see how you hold up. You know, we don't come weak. You know, we keep our darts sharp around here. So don't come weak at all. 1-347-989-0844 if you want to get on with the Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio, keeping it realer than real. Feel free to get on anytime you want to. Again, that's 1-347-989-0844. We welcome all challenges, but it, like we say around here, don't bring that weakness. Don't come in here. Don't bring Kool-Aid to a gin party, as my man SVP likes to say.
It will get slapped off the glass. We will do that right there.
So going in, let's go ahead and talk about the NBA. You know, we spent a good chunk of the show last week talking about LeBron James and the Miami Heat and how they were struggling. As a prelude to LeBron returning to Cleveland, and the fans, we got to give a round of applause real quick to the Cleveland fans. That was a world-class display of hate. I mean, I've never seen so much hate just fill up an arena. I mean, you know, it was like the Haters Ball, 2010, and they held it at the queue with the quitness shirts, Le Cheat, Le Boo, Victim. They had cats lined up spelling out betrayed. It was a beautiful thing. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing. Unfortunately, everybody else got the memo that they were supposed to bring their A game when the Heat came, except for the Cavaliers. I'm sure you all are well aware that Heat came in and put their foot in their backside, kissed their girlfriends, and left. It was one of those type deals where Cleveland just didn't really put up any kind of fight. They just kind of laid down and let LeBron kind of just stand on them and pose for a second, which is unfortunate because it took what could have been a real big early season moment for the NBA away. I think it was still a spectacle. You know, it was still worth watching. It was still worth seeing. You know, there was a college kind of atmosphere as far as the creativity that went into some of the anti-LeBron messages, T-shirts, propaganda. That was displayed throughout the arena. There's a lot of creativity. Again, you don't usually see that in an NBA arena. It's usually reserved for the college game and college crowds, but it was good to see that. I just wish it was a better game because I think, you know, we only got a taste of what the fans really wanted to do to them because the team just didn't give them nothing to fight, nothing to feed off of. Our resident Nostradamus, Negro Domus, our resident Negro Domus, D. Wills, called almost to the assist, to the rebound. He almost called LeBron's line. Give us your assessment of the game this past Thursday, the Heat versus the Cavs.
Well, you know, when I turned it on, it was like the kind of feeling you get before a big fight. You know, one of them mega fights. The way we would feel if we were getting ready for the Pacquiao Mayweather fight. It had that feel to it, and I just found myself like. Now that I look back on it, I'm like, I was wondering why I was scared about whether or not he would take the powder and do his, you know, nobody knew he was going to just do his routine. He did everything. And the crowd, as you said, the crowd was, they brought it all. They had everything there. They're like, Akron, hate you. They had the whole thing going. And as I said in my post on the Facebook and on our blog, it was kind of like, he slowly broke him down in the body. It was like he hit the reverse layup that looked crazy. And then, you know, they were still yelling, but it wasn't with that same kind of energy. Then he hit another J, and he started running past the bench. He just started slowly breaking him down, and you realize the team was going. The team was like I said, the team was like the Washington Generals, like the Cavs. They were just like a prop in the whole thing. They just decided to play along. And to me, that game is a microcosm of the modern NBA in a sense that it's kind of like when I went back to my high school and we had set a tradition in winning and we were talking to some of the young players and we built these friendships. We hung around each other. You know, our championship team, we really liked each other. All these years later, we're on Facebook. And I remember those kids, after hearing our stories, just started exchanging numbers. It wasn't really, you know, authentic. And that's this NBA. This NBA right now doesn't have it. And it was that game was a microcosm of it. I mean, if you were a true Cavalier, I was thinking, you know, you should have put him in the first row. Like, the first time he came down the middle of the lane, he should have been in the first row, and you didn't see any of that fight. And as I said, it says what I'm glad is it kind of exposed a little bit Dan Gilbert and the fact that this is what you got as a product. So it wasn't just about LeBron leaving, but the fact that this is what you got as a product. This is what your owner is, and he's kind of masking and covering all the LeBron stuff with the stuff that he ain't doing. And I felt sorry for Byron Scott, who, you know, I like a lot as a coach, but it's a lot of work you've got to do. But it was just good for that game. It didn't tell me anything, and you and I talked about this off air, about the Heat. For that moment, the Heat did what they had to do in that moment. And that, you know, it has kind of served as a catalyst for them to win some games, but it didn't tell me that they were going to be able to compete against the Celtics. It didn't tell me they were going to be able to compete against Orlando in a 5 or 7-game series. It didn't tell me if they could play the Lakers. It didn't tell me that. But it did tell me is in the moment, LeBron can be who he is. LeBron has always stepped up in some of those moments, and he did it again last week. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed putting the prediction out there. If y'all haven't seen it, get on Facebook. I came pretty close to calling what they – When I saw the atmosphere, I'm like, oh, he about to clown. I don't know how he's going to do it, but he about to put his clown suit on with all the makeup, and he just going to do what he does, and it's just going to be his night. He came back like Deion, like, this is my house. And Deion went back to the Georgia Dome. He just said, this is my house. And everybody else played along with it. And that's the part probably got me mad about. I'm like, come on, fellas. Come on, Gibson.
Yeah, you see Chuck got pissed. I don't know if you watched the TNT teleclass, but Chuck got pissed at halftime. He was like, come on. I mean, and I think that's why the Cavaliers are who they are. And, you know, one of the announcers that a lot of, you know, we listen to a lot of sports radio. We like sports radio. So I was listening to Cowherd, listening to Jim Rome, listening to Dan Patrick the next day. And a lot of their assessment was interesting. They took a real interesting angle towards it. They talked about the Cavs just showed us why LeBron left.
That's right.
They have no heart. They have no heart. Why would you want to play with that bunch of dudes? If you can't get up for that game, if you can't play any harder for that game, you have no heart.
And the person that you got to talk about is Mo Williams. Mo, if you who you say you are, you go for 30 on them in a losing effort. But it's like, I'm going for 30 on y'all. Because y'all ain't got nobody who can guard me. Like, where's the dog? Like, there was no dog. The dog meter was, like, off. Dog meter was, like, on negative. It's like Byron would have gone out there and got 10 points just on that. You know, that's the kind of dog Byron is. I know that's
right.
30. Byron might have gone out there and got 10 just on his own thing. You know, and you're right. It's just like, that's what he left. He knew. You know, LeBron's smart. Looked around that locker room, he's like, other than Barajal, I ain't got nothing.
Yeah, I mean, and unfortunately, you know, and again, those LeBron fans out there, don't get it twisted. I was never a proponent of LeBron leaving Cleveland or staying in Cleveland. I'm not against him leaving Cleveland. I'm against the way he did it. Again, don't get me wrong. I feel like he made a good basketball decision. I think some of his expectations, some of his ideas of how things were going to go were misguided. The decision was a decision. Everybody know that was a mistake. He even admits that was a mistake at this point. But I think they still had the Miami Heat themselves still had an expectation that they was going to walk over the rest of the league. And that arrogance in itself is what bothers me, is that, no, you're not going to walk all over the league. The rest of the league, you know, the rest of the league ain't like the Cavaliers locker room. You know, I think being in Cleveland 7 years may have warped LeBron's idea of what the rest of the league was like. Being in the locker room with that bunch of punks in Cleveland must have warped LeBron's idea of what the rest of the league, what the other locker rooms in the league were like, because the Celtics locker room ain't like that. They play against the Celtics. The Celtics going to beat you. Get on Twitter and take a quote of yours and flip it. That's what the Celtics going to do. You know what I'm saying? Even Dallas, and Dallas's heart is questionable, has been questionable in the past, put it on the Heat. Like, they have something to prove. You know, every good team that the Heat has played has put it on them, like they got something to prove. And the Cavs just show that they're not in that caliber, they're not in that class. And, yeah, the Miami's got a little win streak going, but, again, they haven't faced any of those teams. They're not going against the Utah. They're not going against the Hornets. They're not going against, you know, the Magic. They're not going against the Celtics or the Lakers. They're not playing against any of those top-tier teams. They're not playing in this winning streak. They haven't beat any team that I think is going to be playing in May and June. So, you know, they're still 1-7 against the league's elite. And those are the teams that they put this team together to beat. So the fact that they're beating up on the Bobcats and they're beating up on, you know, these middling teams, that's whatever. You know, I'm impressed that they're starting to figure it out, but these are the teams that they're supposed to beat by 20. Again, we'll see how things go. We'll see how their record pans out against the elites in the league.
The one thing I would say is what I liked about Eric Spoelstra, and this, I've been saying this from the beginning, is the extending the defense and trapping. Use to what you is your advantage. Make that your strength. What your strength is, you got guys who can cover a lot of court. They're very athletic. They can cover a lot of court. They can guard a man and a half. Use that. Don't take people out of their comfort zone. Stretch them out a little bit and trap a little bit and create that chaos. You know, because if it comes down to scoring 130 points, your team is going to win. Nobody's going to outscore you. If y'all get in the running, and you talk about LeBron and Wade and all them being an open court, I put my money on them. So you create that space. Now that might not be the way you can play for the playoffs, but it's taking people out of that comfort zone is what I saw his adjustments there, and then his rotation that he had going on with LeBron and Wade, and sometimes getting them off on not having them on the floor together. But when he had them on the floor together, he extended the defense. So some of those things I like what I saw about him as a coach, and you know, I like him a lot. He's in a tough situation, but you can see him trying to make the adjustments and trying to get these guys to do some different things. So that part I like a little bit, and I'll see how that plays out, like you said, against some of these better teams, you know, how you might be able to utilize that strategy.
Yeah, you know, we'll see how it goes for the Heat. Again, like, they got a nice little winning streak going. You know, we talked about this on before we got on the air. And, you know, maybe going into Cleveland, going into that, maybe that did galvanize them a bit. Maybe that did give them, help them rally around LeBron, and maybe that does bring them closer, help them become more of a cohesive unit. But I still think they got some holes. I still haven't heard a solid argument other than give them some time, as far as from any Heat supporter in regards to why they think that this team is going to win a championship this year. You know, I think even at this point, even the Heat supporters have to realize that they don't have the pieces yet, you know. And I think that's why the chant is give them some time, give them some time. Wait till December. Wait till January. Wait till All-Star break. What are you waiting for? It's not, you know, Wilt Chamberlain is not walking through that door, you know. So, again, the little winning streak is nice, but the Bobcats won't be playing in May. None of these teams are going to be playing in May, so I'm not extremely impressed. One team that I am a little bit more impressed with is the Knicks. The Knicks have been playing some ball, and, you know, Amari Stoudemire is proving that there is life after leaving Steve Nash. Nash has exposed, you know, Sean Marion and a bunch of other, Quentin Richardson, a bunch of cats, Boris Diaw, you know, a bunch of cats after they left Nash just wasn't quite as effective as they were when they were in Phoenix. But Amari's proven that he can still do his thing, and he can play basketball regardless of – well, no, I won't say regardless of system, because D'Antoni's still running that same – he's still running that same type of D'Antoni, Tony-esque system. But he's got the Knicks going in the right direction. He's leading. He's earning that money. He's earning that money from that big deal he signed this offseason. So good for him. Good for him. New York, any New York listeners, feel free to call in. Tell us about how the city is buzzing, that the Knicks have got a little win streak going. Ray Felton looking like a ball player. People forget that Raymond Felton was one of the top picks in that draft. I think he was a top five pick. He may have been taken before. I want to say he was taken either before or right after Deron Williams and CP3. And I think people kind of forget that about Ray Felton, that he was viewed on their level coming in as a prospect. But, you know, being where he was taken, things didn't quite turn out the way they were supposed to. You know, a lot of coaching changes, bad organization, and his game just didn't look like what it was. But it seems like he's having kind of – his career has been on somewhat of a Chauncey Billups-type trajectory, where, you know, now he's found a good situation, and he's starting to figure it out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about, you know, I mean, Gallinari, you know, Chandler, Felton. I mean, Felton had, what, 18 and 11 last night. I mean, they began to put this together. And like you said, I mean, they're making, you know, they're being competitive every night and making a run. And, you know, that's what I like to see. And, you know, making a case for some, you know, other free agents to say, look, things are happening in New York. I think that's the best case about what they're doing, is they're making themselves marketable for a possible free agents in the future to come and join Amari, that we're going in the right direction. They're signaling that we're not the Knicks under Isaiah. We're not the Knicks over here, that we've turned this thing around. And this is okay place for you to come and be a part of it. So, you know, they're probably ahead of schedule. But you know, you're right, they're doing what they need to do.
Yeah, you know, and D'Antoni looks like he has some pieces in place. And they still got one piece that I think if this guy figures it out, they go from being a decent team to a dangerous team, and that's Anthony Randolph. That's the kid that they got from Golden State. Kid's got a ton of potential, but it looks like he's got a bad attitude. But that's another piece. If he ever figures out whatever it is they want him to do, that's an in-house piece that could really put them over the edge and possibly put them you know, in position where, you know, they can compete with the team. I still think they'll have a little trouble winning the first round series, because they're probably going to come in as an underdog and playing on a road. But I think it helps them compete a little bit more, and that's a young piece that they can develop and continue to grow with. But I agree with everything that you said. I think it definitely makes them a more appealing destination for potential free agents, that they can win with this roster. And, you know, the roster is decent at best. It's not great. If you put another star in there, and again, you know, it has to be a star who fits. We're not going with the Miami formula where you just go get somebody. But a star who fits in with what they're trying to do and who has a skill set that complements what they already got, it could get, you know, New York could mean something again, and we could have some Miami-New York series, some New York-Chicago, you know, get back to, it'd be like the 80s all over again. You know, that would be nice.
Yeah, and I'd be like, you know, you look at their roster, they got some pieces where, like you said, where you got just some role players like Turi Off, you got some people who can bang a little bit, you can play different styles. So, you know, the roster's not where it is, but if you think about where it is now versus where it was a year ago and who was leading the helm, I mean, they've done some amazing things just in a year's time, you know, and, you know, where they could be next year. So, yeah, I mean, New York is relevant. And if you, you know, if you're setting your goals and being realistic, like, you know, let's get the 8th, 7th seed, let's make the playoffs and let's, you know, if nothing else, try to win that first round game or, you know, stretch it to a game, final game, was that game 5 or whatever, you know, try to, or 7-game series, you know.
Yeah, I think 7 games in a row.
7 now. So stretch it to a 7-game series. You know, those kind of things would be, you would say, this was a good season. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're on track to do that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I like the Knicks. And then you also got in Chicago, got Boozer back, and he had good numbers the other night as well. So, I mean, that East is beginning to wake up. So you got New York waking up, and then you got Chicago getting Boozer back, and, you know, he's starting to put his game together early on since coming back. And, you know, that's going to be another, you know, player that's going to end up. And so this thing is about to liven up, particularly in the East, with some of these teams that are, you know, beginning to put it all together.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, again, I think, you know, they got the pieces, and we'll see. I think, you know, the building blocks and the pieces are there. We'll see what they do in New York. The other big NBA story right now is the NBA then took over the Hornets. What the hell is up with that?
Somebody needed to.
Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Is that a bad sign? Is contraction actually possible? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's up with that? I mean, I saw the story, I read the story, and I still don't know what to think. I let it sit in for a couple of days thinking, like, okay, we need to talk about this on the show, but I still don't know what I think about it. Like, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? I mean, are they going to move? Are the Hornets going to eventually become the Sonics? You know, I have my own plan for the NBA and what I think they should do, but I don't know what this means. You know, we'll get into that another time, but this is crazy.
Well, but I mean, I think, you know, you and I have talked about this, and you know, if there's one league that could benefit from contraction, it's the NBA. You know, the Heat have, you know, kind of created theirs, you know, they kind of just created what they created. But, you know, if you could set it up so that you could have a lot more depth on these teams, you could have an exciting league with the kind of talent that's coming in. You know, or, I mean, people have got to, I think some of these leagues have not done a really good market search. I mean, I'm not to say that I know it all, but, I mean, there's some places that you just know are going to be difficult. And, I mean, obviously Katrina and what's happening in New Orleans, but I never thought about New Orleans other than the old Jazz back in the day. But, you know, you just never thought about it as that big of that NBA town. And maybe it is. Market research tells you that. You know, Katrina obviously had an impact on it. But it's kind of like, you know, everybody knows Jacksonville. I mean, it's a decision about Jacksonville football. I mean, it's just some of these towns we're picking for leagues and expansion, you know, it's not the best route. And the NBA is one place that probably could be okay with losing two teams in billions.
I think they should lose three or four. I think they should lose four teams. Toronto, maybe you hang on to that team just because Toronto is a major metropolitan area. It's a good market to be in. But Toronto, I'm not sold on them as a basketball city, as a basketball town. Memphis, I'm not sold on as a. Well, I think Kentucky, the state of Kentucky, I think is an untapped market. Kentucky's basketball crazy, you know, and I think if they got a team in Louisville or in Lexington or someplace that has affinity for basketball, they would be better off than Memphis. Or even going to a St. Louis, a place like that, that could use a NBA team, or finding a small town like a San Antonio that doesn't have any of the pro sports, you know, because if you're competing with football in the South, you're gonna lose.
yeah, that's right.
If you're competing with the NFL in the South, you're gonna lose. That's why I think Oklahoma City was a good market. The whole state of Oklahoma has no professional teams. You know, it can be the only show in town when college football season's over. It's got it on lock. The Thunder are it, and that's good for a small market team. You know, in with small market teams, you got to look at the Packers model. Ain't much else going on in Wisconsin,
right?
And the Packers shut it down. You know, the Packers shut it down. It's not nothing that's gonna compete with them. For eyes and attention on a pro sports level, you got to find those kind of places where this is the show, and there's nothing else to do here but this, and this is going to shut it down. You know, I think Seattle, you know, so Memphis can go, Toronto can go. If New Jersey wasn't moving to Brooklyn, I'd say they could go. Let me pull up the NBA teams real quick, and I'll give you who I think can bite it real quick. But Memphis, Toronto, let me see who else. Who else could take a hike? The one reason I wouldn't get rid of Sacramento is because I think they should move that team to Vegas. I think the NBA needs to get off, quit sitting on their shoulders, and go ahead and move a team to Vegas. And whatever mental block they got about having a team in Vegas, get over it. Charlotte can go. So that's three teams. If I had to, I guess I got to pick one more.
You're going to take Mike out. He just came on it like, you know, now you're talking about contracting.
Hey, contract them bad boys, man. That team is destined to fail. That team is destined to fail. And then I would, honestly, as much as I like the idea of two L.A. teams, I'd snatch the Clippers out of L.A. Because that owner ain't done jack with that team in 20 years. You know, so you lose the Clippers, you lose Toronto, you lose Charlotte, and you can get rid of, who else did I say, Memphis. And I think you got a good league at that point. Maybe you move the Hornets to Seattle, bring the Sonics back, and move Sacramento to Vegas. And I think you got a league that's viable. I think you got a league. You're in the right places in that moment. But I think the league is just spread too thin. It's too many teams and cities that just don't give a damn about basketball.
Right.
You know, I think in a city like Vegas, a star for a pro team, the NBA could just own that town. I mean, that would become a thing to do in Vegas. You go to Vegas, you go gambling, you know, you hang out, and then, oh, the Heat's in town. So let's go see LeBron play against the Vegas team. You know how attractive that would be for free agents to go play in Vegas? You know what I'm saying? It would be like South Beach. It would be like South Beach. It really would. You know, and again, I can understand how New Orleans could be like that if it was more viable. And, you know, Katrina just effed New Orleans up.
That's right.
I mean, New Orleans could have been a spot like that where players wanted to go down there because it's like a never-ending party. You know, at least that's what it seems like when you're not from there. It seems like a never-ending party. So cats would have been a little bit interested in going down there to play, but Katrina messed all that up. But moving the team to Vegas, I think, is the next thing. The NBA just has to get over the whole gambling thing, and I think that's something that the league just needs to do, and it needs to do it before the NFL does. Because if the NFL puts a team in Vegas and in L.A., it's done. It's a wrap.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, those are two markets that the NFL hasn't tapped yet. But, again, if you could, that whole Vegas style, that whole Vegas image of going in, the nightlife, and having a fast time, it, you know, if you could add into that whole formula, let's go in, let's hit the casino, let's hit the nudie bars, whatever you're trying to do, and then let's go check an NBA game, too. You know, let's go to the game, then let's hit the casinos, then let's hit the clubs. If you put that into that story narrative, man, that's a moneymaker, in my opinion. You know, I know the Maloofs already got roots in Vegas, and they got deep pockets, and, you know, they already got ties to Vegas, and I know they want to move that team there. But it's hard for them to get out of Sacramento because Sacramento has shown that team so much love over the past years. I think you move the Kings to Vegas, and they become a different type of franchise. You know, they become a hot spot to be.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, they already, you know, even in the WNBA, you know, have what the Connecticut team or whatever it might be playing in a casino. You know, because gambling is spread throughout the country in some of the casinos and stuff like that, and in towns all over. I mean, in Detroit, I mean, you got a casino where the Pistons play. I mean, so betting's happening. I think that's opening up people to look at Vegas in a different way because, you know, it's no longer just in Vegas and in New Jersey, you know, on the boardwalk. It's all over the country popping up in the different casinos near NBA cities already or NFL cities. So I think you're going to see something. But they got to make, I mean, people have to rethink this as much. And, you know, part of the brand is building competitive teams that can come and compete every night. And are you diluting the product? There's too much going on when you got young players coming in who need to develop, you know, and you got, you know, you're trying to expand the league. I think that was part of it. So you had all these young players coming in at the time. You also expand the league, and some of these young players didn't turn out, and some of these franchises making bad decisions on selection, and then they just spiraling out. So, you know, you have to rethink that. So, I mean, a lot of things you just said, I think, are all in play. But, see, you know, New Orleans is just one example of, you know, what needs to happen. They got a star like Chris Paul. The seats are empty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the Saints games are filling up.
Right.
So, you know, something's happening.
Yeah, I mean, you got a market that's strained. And it just, I mean, right now New Orleans can't support two professional teams. Not the way you would like them to.
And like you said, it's SEC country. So, you know, that's also where college football and high school
football,
all those up are king.
Exactly.
You know, so especially at this time of year, you know, you got the Saints, you got LSU Tigers, you got high school football, you got all that. I mean, you're talking about a very football-dominated area. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, that definitely affects the first part of the season. Is definitely impacted as well. So, you know, hopefully they get it right.
Yeah, hopefully they get it right. Hopefully they figure it out. I think, you know, it's going to take a lot of pill swallowing. You know, it's a hard pill to swallow. And I don't think Stern wants to I don't think Stern wants to lose teams on his watch. You know, I don't think he wants the NBA to contract on his watch because part of his whole tenure as commissioner has been about expanding the league and making the league bigger. So we'll see how that plays out as things continue to develop. Real quick, I want to invite callers, listeners to call in. 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to get on with the Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio. Feel free to jump, pull up a chair, and get to the table and join in the conversation at any point. We're going to shift gears real quick from our NBA talk and get into our weekly talk about Pimps and Hoes, also known as college football. So we're going to get into that real quick. It's bowl season, man. It's bowl season.
Right.
We got a lot of intriguing bowls to talk about. I got a list of bowls to hit on. We'll get to those in a second. A couple things I want to hit on before we get into talking about the different bowl matchups. The Heisman voters, man, they tripping.
Oh, yeah.
They tripping. I mean, you got four or five Heisman voters who have already said that they're not going to vote for, they're not even putting Cam Newton on their ballots. I feel a certain kind of way about that. You know, it's like he was declared, whether you agree with it or not, he's in play. All right? He's in play. He's legal. He's eligible. If he's eligible, he should win the Heisman. Hands down. There's nobody who's been close to producing the way he's produced and who's almost single-handedly taken a team that was an afterthought, wasn't even ranked in the top 25 at the beginning of the season, and pushed them into the and carried them into the national championship game. But yet, somehow, you can justify on some, you know, you can take the, you can try to take a moral high ground and say, oh well, I'm going to take him off my ballot totally. That just don't sit right with me, man. It just don't sit right with me. I don't know how you feel about that.
You know, it, folks kill me with this, and it, you know, it's about the integrity of the game, and I'm thinking, come on, there's too many examples of where it doesn't exist. This whole selection process, this whole, you know, positioning for the bowls and the money related, and who's going to bring the most fans, and all these things that are really about corporate sponsorship, money, and all these. You know, all the development work that's done on these corporate sites where the Alumni Association and everybody's involved in all of this, you know, and for me, I'm okay with all that, you know, but don't have all that and then come back here and talk about, you know, I felt like Reggie Bush should have kept this stuff. You know, have Reggie, they can come to your house and get it. You know, that's how I feel about it. You know, it's all kinds of people sitting in the Heisman. If you were to do background checks on all of them folks, you know, there's no saints there. It's the same thing with all these Hall of Fame. It's about the field of play. And people talk about all these other things that are away from the field. And, you know, nobody's taking OJ's Heisman away. You know, it's all of this stuff that we talk about. So, you know, I think, you know, let people do what they're going to do. You know, he's going to end up winning. And then, you know, folks get to do what they're going to do. I mean, this is a game. We just got to just live with it, you know. But, you know, on the Real Sports Guy, we're going to pull back the veil. Don't act like it's just, oh, I'm, you know, I got integrity and everybody else doesn't. Come on. It's about what you did in the field of play. He's clowning them. He's like a video game on them. And you just got to take it like you got to take it. You know, the NCAA has ruled that he can play, so you need to vote accordingly. So, you know, but you know, that's how it's going to be. And because they want to be in a position to say, I told you so in 5 years. That's why I didn't vote for him. They want to be able to then come on ESPN and all the other places and say, you know, that's why I didn't vote. It's like the people who didn't vote for to bail out the banks. You know, if the stuff would have crashed, you look like a fool, you know. But, you know, things are a little slow coming back in your mind. Like, that's why I didn't vote for it for the midterm election. You know, people try to position themselves for stuff like that when they know that the reality is it's a farce. So that's all I got to say.
Yeah. You know, again, like, it just seems asinine to me, you know. Everybody getting money. It's out there. You know, everybody, you know. Yeah, I guarantee you you're going to see the CEO of Fiesta Bowl at the strip club somewhere making it rain, just throwing money all over the place. Why? Because he can't.
When you pay in six figures for people to basically be event planners for bowls, what are we talking about?
Absolutely. What are we talking about, people? What are we talking about? Which, you know, again, I'm always, you know, I always get a little testy when people say they prefer college sports over pro sports. You know, and I always tell them, well, you don't actually like the sport itself, because if you watch any pro sport, you compare it to college, the product in college is inferior. It's a different product, and it's an inferior product if you compare the play on the field and the nuance and the intricacies and the detail and the skill levels of the players. It's just inferior. But what you are more of a fan of is atmosphere and antics. You know, because that's what the college sport is about. You know, you're about laundry, you're about atmosphere. I get that. But I'd rather watch the pros because I know everybody's getting paid like they should be getting paid. Some of them getting paid more than they should be getting paid. But everybody's getting paid for what they're doing, you know. I don't believe in indentured servitude, and that's what college football seems like to me, college sports in general. And that's why I can watch them, I can appreciate them, I can talk about them. But at the end of the day, I just feel like it's a hustle. It's pimping 101, you know. You know, at this point, it's probably a graduate level course. It'd probably be like pimping, you know, 806 or something like that. but it is what it is. But one thing I will ask you and get your opinion on is Cam Newton as a pro prospect. Where do you see him as a professional prospect? I'm gonna pull up Mel Kiper's, pull up the draft board real quick and see where they have him ranked. I think he's on Mel's big board. We'll take a look and see. Give me your assessment of Cam as a pro prospect.
I think he's a good pro prospect. I mean, if you take what people thought about Bisyong, I mean, I look at his at least his motion. There's some things that could be fixed about motion, but I mean, he's got a lot of good basics that you can work with. And some of the plays he made in terms of arm strength and stuff that I thought he demonstrated in the championship game, you know, tells you that he's got a lot to go there. And the thing that you can't coach is he's a competitor and he's a winner. And he doesn't just run to run. I mean, he'll sit back in that pocket and make a throw. So, and he's 6'5", 6'6". So, I think, you know, I think he has all the ability to be a great quarterback, you know, and I'm not even going to say in the right system. I think in most systems he could be a good quarterback. He's not Vince Young with the crazy throwing motion, or some of these other quarterbacks we talked about. You know, Tebow, he's not that kind of guy. I mean, he's a guy, you know, you watch him, he makes some plays, he makes some throws. So, you know, I wouldn't sleep on him. Now, is he better than Luck? You know, Luck is, you know, is great. It depends on what you got. You know, most people are probably going to have Luck go, but, you know, don't think Cam can't do it.
Yeah, Kiper's got him number 3 at quarterback behind Mallett and Luck, and he's got him number 14 overall on his big board. McShay and Scouts Inc. don't even have him up there. He's not even in the first round. He's not even in their top 32. But they only got three quarterbacks. So they got Locker ahead of him in their top 32. Scouts Inc. does. So,
people are going to go with Ballard and Locker. I mean, as traditional kind of quarterbacks who can do it. But I think if you're going to sleep, I think Cam, you know, they don't run a very complicated offense, but he seems like the kind of kid that he can get it and he can learn, you know. And if you look at his mechanics, they're not crazy wrong. I mean, not you can't fix.
Right.
You know, it's not like you look at Vince Young when he came out, you're like, wow, you got to work with his motion or work with it. I mean, he's got a decent throw motion. He got some touch on it. He got some things that he can get done. So, yeah, I'm not going to sleep on him.
Yeah, and my thing is, you know, I think Luck is a solid quarterback, and I don't think if you take him number one, I'm not mad at you. Mallett, I don't know about Mallett. He reminds me of Scott Mitchell a little too much. He got that Scott Mitchell in him. And then Locker to me is Ryan Leaf too. He's learned Ryan Leaf 2.0. I think he's got the tools, but this is a kid who's not won at all at the college level. Every time there's expectations on him, he don't perform. I'm not sold on Jake Locker. I think Jake Locker, you know, they got him up there pretty high. Kiper has him below Cam. My thing with Locker is that I just don't think he rises to the occasion. Like, this was his year where he was supposed to show that he was a legit pro quarterback, and he didn't. And to me, that if you're going to go back, you're going back to improve your stock. And when you fall, when you go back and you drop, that's a telltale sign that either the pressure got to you or you wasn't what we thought you were.
Yeah,
the two things that you don't want as a quarterback.
And it sounds like with him, they even in positions where you thought they would put the ball in his hands, the game in his hands, Sarkisian needed to do it. So that tells you, I mean, this is a guy who's worked with, you know, NFL-level quarterbacks at USC and didn't feel comfortable saying, kid, go win it. So that right there, there's plenty, like you said, yeah, there's plenty of signs. Now, the question you got to look at is, do we take him in second, third round and say, okay, but he's got good enough skills, we'll sit back and wait for him to develop.
Well, absolutely. I don't take him in the first round. I don't spend a first-round pick on him. And whether I take him in the third or second or third round depends on what else I need. If quarterback, if I'm, for example, if I'm Arizona, you know, maybe if I can get a veteran quarterback, maybe I sit him behind somebody who's playing. Or, you know, if I'm a team with an established quarterback who may be on their way out, you know, maybe Jacksonville or somebody like that who has a Garrard or somebody like that who you're not quite sure how many years they got left or how much more time you're going to stick with that guy. And you put him back there and let him learn and then throw him out there, yeah. But otherwise, I'm not messing with that dude. And I like Cam more than I like Locker and Mallett. I don't know if I like Cam more. Physically, Cam is more gifted than any of these guys. Again, what I like to see is how can he digest, can he do what Michael Vick has done, which is learn how to play quarterback and commit himself to learn how to play quarterback. I don't know what that's a personality thing. That's a personality thing. Because Vince Young was a great leader too, and he is a great leader when things are going well. But, you know, because Vince Young has won at every level. If you look at his pro record, he's got a winning record as a quarterback, as a pro. But that's when things are going well. What happens when things aren't going well is when you see Vince Young's biggest, most glaring weakness is that he just crumbles when things aren't going his way, when things aren't going well. He can't take that. You can't do nothing with that at the quarterback.
Yeah, and that's what impressed me about Cam. Under all this scrutiny, what his teammates said, he just kept us focused.
Yeah.
So he's under intense scrutiny and still was like, you know, I'm going to put it in. And that right there told me a lot about him. You know, if you're going to look at picking him up, is that this is not a guy that's going to get under the big light and not know how to act.
Absolutely. So to me, that gives him two out of the three qualities I think you need to have as a quarterback. You need to have the physical tools. I think he's got those. He seems like he has the leadership ability and the intangible resolve to be able to handle the ups and downs of playing the quarterback position and leading the team. Can he take an NFL offense and digest it? That's the other one. And I don't know yet, you know. I'm not saying that he can't, not saying that he can. I just don't know enough about him at this point. Work ethic. And I think that's what that boils down to is the guys even luck? I don't know if his work ethic speaks, you know, I have seen nothing to this point that says he has that work ethic to be able to take an NFL playbook, digest it, and learn it. I didn't even know that about Sam Bradford, but he looked like he got it figured out. You know, Sam Bradford's come in and had a great rookie year. And I really didn't know what to think about him, given that I always question guys who come back. I always question quarterbacks specifically who are pretty much number one picks who then come back for another year. And I've always kind of just looked at those guys a little funny. It just raises a few red flags for me when a guy who's you're talked about as the number one pick and you go back to school, you're the number one pick. What are you waiting on? You know, you waiting on being – there's nothing higher than the number one pick, so what are you coming back to school to improve your stock for? You know, so those guys usually, when those decisions are made, usually worry me. So I didn't know what to think of Bradford. I liked his skills. I liked his ability, but I didn't know what to think of him. And it's the same way with Luck. I like his skills. I like his ability, but I don't know enough about him to say he's going to be a surefire quarterback. Because I think it all boils down to how quickly can they digest an offense.
And with that, I probably would buy in they can do that because you know his coach Harbaugh was an NFL quarterback and Mr. Comeback and you know through you know, knows what it takes to be there, and they run an offense that probably he's got to learn some things and do it. So I would say that, you know, his time with Harbaugh probably tells me he's getting ready, he's ready to do this. Now, I don't get into the stuff that everybody else said. They, you know, they say he's about as sure as anyone, and they say in several years to be a lock for being a quality NFL quarterback. And, you know, I don't, you know, I've seen him play a couple times, and, you know, I don't know or not know about that. Obviously, they had a good year. But I think he's ready to go, and I would be comfortable with him. I think after him, everybody else has glaring weaknesses, one way or another. Like you said, Locker, just something was there, he didn't perform. You know, some of the things you said about Cam, you know, can he digest, you know, because the offense he ran was, you know, normally the spread offense is not as complicated as the kind of things he's going to see. Mallett's probably one of more pro offense down there, but, you know, is he going to be able to keep his emotions under control? He is a very fiery guy, and so, but he could be Philip Rivers, you know, fiery, mm-hmm. competitive, kind of go. You know, he started out his career at Michigan, so I knew a little bit about him when up here, the stuff he did in the Midwest. But you know, he's got some possibilities, and you know, he's down there with, you know, is it Pacino, whatever. I mean, he's learned how to run a pro style offense. So I mean, this class, the question is, you know, where could they end up, these top three quarterbacks? I don't know if it's deep, but these top three could be interesting. You know,
yeah.
They can make this class along with some of the other players, you know, if they come through. And it's going to be about teams. You know, I don't think as much with Luck as it is. But, yeah, I think for some of the other ones, it's going to make a difference on where they go. Could be a lot of it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where these guys, how these things shake out, because there are going to be some teams that are looking for quarterbacks, you know, within the next year, within this next draft. And this may be the last big payday for these rookies.
Right.
With the lockout looming, and who knows what kind of if there's going to be a rookie salary scale or how that's going to work. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. What I do want to get into now is some of these bowl matchups. I got about 7 or 8 bowls that we can go into real quick while we finish up this first hour before we get into talking about the most important league in the world, which is the NFL. So starting off, we got Utah versus Boise State. And by each of these matchups, when I was taking my notes over the weekend, as they were announcing the bowl, I just wrote down a little question. And the question I had for this game was, how pissed off is Boise going to be? Is Utah about to catch it?
Yeah, I was just thinking when you said it, blowout. Like, this is going to be a blowout. And I just, you know, yeah. Yeah, how much, you know, because, yeah, they're mad. And, yeah, this is going to be a blowout.
So then the question is, what happens if they don't blow them out? Because I think if they blow them out, it's going to be like, okay, yeah, Boise put it on them because Boise felt like they had to prove a point. And what if they're not able to prove that point? What does that say about this Boise team? You know, to use the Denny Green quote, you know, are they who we thought they were? You know, all season, or were they protected by their weak schedule?
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody's talking about Virginia Tech and all the stuff they've done here lately. And, you know, and they went on the road and started that Virginia Tech swirl to the ground. You know, again, I think I would say about a program like Boise is that they've done it over enough years that, you know, they're kind of like Gonzaga. You know, yeah, but you know they're good. You know they're going to be able to compete. And yeah, they're not in the big conferences, they're not in the ACC or whatever it might be in basketball, but you know they're good. I think Boise's record, ECU, are these kind of teams that transcend just being in these conferences. Like, they got the qualities to win. So, you know, I would say that, you know, I watched the Nevada game, and Nevada got a special quarterback out there. And so
yeah, that's the kid to look out for. Yeah. If you're a fan of a team that's looking for a quarterback but not looking to go with quarterback in the first round, I can't say his name. I think it's like Copernicus or something like that. I don't know. I think Copernicus was an astronomer or some shit like that. But anyway.
A Greek philosopher. That's your liberal arts education.
Yeah, you know. I did take a couple philosophy classes. But I don't know what, like I said, I can't, but the kid from the quarterback from Nebraska, he's about 6'6". He's not as big as Cam Newton physically, but he's about 6'6", probably about 220, 230. He could run pretty well, got a pretty good arm. You know, he could wind up being a very good pro quarterback, and, you know, your team could be very lucky picking that kid in the third or fourth round. If he's still there, he may go higher than that. He may, you know, once workouts and stuff get going, he may be one of those guys that you're like, who the hell is this kid that's on my team's draft board? But, you know, you'd be lucky to get him. That's Copernicus, so be on the lookout for Copernicus.
It's the real sports guys. You know, Ray up here, we're going to butcher a few.
Oh, yeah, I can't say that boy's name to save my life. I ain't even going to try. But, yeah, I think Boise State's got to bang Utah. I think they got to just go and kick Utah in the face. I mean, just like karate kick him in the mouth. First quarter, just to say, look, man, we ain't playing, right? You know, we ain't playing. Yeah, y'all think we got a little chink in our arm, but we are who y'all, you know, we who we supposed to be, and we're going to represent today. So that's one matchup. Another matchup I had was Notre Dame versus Miami. And what I wrote by that is the mighty have fallen again.
The
these are two.
The convicts.
Yeah, these are the two programs that are always coming back. For the last 10 years, you know, these programs both have been coming back. And every time they get ready to be back, they have a season like this where they go 7-5 or something, you know? And it's like, oh, they're not back yet. You know,
I mean, the more competitive game is going to be the flag football game that's going to be played by the ex-players before the game.
I actually pay to see that. especially you know, you get Michael Irvin out there, you know, you get some of those old school Hurricanes out there, you know, Warren Sapp, get some of those boys out there. I like to see that. You get Kozar running quarterback. Is Kozar sober right now? I don't know.
I don't know. He might be.
Last time I saw Bernie, man, he was looking rough. I saw him on that U30 and 30, man, and Bernie was looking like he was drunk on set.
Oh, yeah. He's been sipping on something a little bit more than gin and juice.
Yeah.
I'm not going to. You know, I don't know if you want to get too deep in this or wait till they get closer to the game, but I think that just what's happening in Miami, everything else, I think that Notre Dame is going to win this game. I hate to say that. I just think that, you know, the kids' reaction to what happened with Shannon, and which is a whole other issue in Miami, is, you know, I just think that these kids are just ready for the season to be over. I mean, they lost three of their top recruits, I think. One is, I think, probably the top quarterback or cornerback. Somebody just, you know, decided to decommit. So, you know, I'm thinking Notre Dame is probably their trajectory. They're going up. They've had some late runs here, and I think, you know, they're going to – I think this is going to be, you know, their staple game. And what I did say when I heard this is, like, I think they should just get back on each other's schedule.
They really should
get back on each other's schedule as a way of beginning to build things up for both programs.
Yeah, I would be in favor of that if I was either one of those schools, because I think they need each other more now than ever.
Yes.
You know. The other game I wrote down, Mississippi State versus Michigan. And what I wrote down after that one was, is this Rich Rod's last stand? If he loses in a bowl game to Mississippi State, is it over?
I got the inside crowd. I got the inside that's working behind the scenes on this one. And it's already, I believe it's a done deal. So whatever happens, win or lose,
my feeling is it's over. Win or lose, I think it's over.
Exclusive. Breaking news.
I'm going to put it over. I'm going to put it over here. You know, I got little birdies running.
Rodriguez
around.
Is done in Ann Arbor.
That's my prediction.
If he's done, what do you think is next for him? Do you think he goes to Miami? I think he can coach. I think he's just a bad fit. I think you're taking a Ford F-150, and trying to turn it into a Lamborghini.
Yeah.
You know, and it can be done, but hell, it's gonna be hard.
Well, you know the weird thing about it, and this is a rivalry. This is with either Miami or I thought Pittsburgh. You know,
yeah.
Back in the Big East, where he has his roots. You know, I think it's just there's a couple of things that you said. I mean, I think the way he came in like no other coach. I mean, he came in while he was on the sidelines during the ball game. I've never seen that before. So how they brought him in, you know, why Kyle was still coaching the team, and people took offense to it. So he kind of that kind of hurt him. This whole defensive fiasco, you know, that, you know, Robinson appears to be taking the heat for. I don't think that was Robinson's philosophy of defense he wanted to play, but they wanted to play at West Virginia. And then recruiting players on defense like you playing at West Virginia rather than recruiting like you playing at Michigan where you go get the top defensive players in the country and say come to Michigan. You know, it's just you act like you at Michigan. Don't act like you at West Virginia. So I think all of that is just driving. And you just built this new stadium with Andre drove past a few weeks ago. That looks great. You got to keep filling up, and you got to keep paying for it. And that you can't be there's a lot of money. So yeah, I think the players will play. They'll play hard. I just think normally Michigan's got a winning record against the SEC, but I just think this is going to be a tough one for them to win. Mississippi State's got, you know, solid foundation, but, you know, it'll be high scoring. I can say the Nargon clown. And the Michigan defense kind of shored up a little bit up into that Ohio State game. I don't know what they're going to show up with, but it's going to be one of them last calls.
Mm-hmm.
Last call for alcohol.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that works out for Rodriguez and you know where he winds up because I still think he can coach. I just think he was in a situation that it was just a mismatch, and I think things like you were saying, like the things you pointed out, show kind of what I have been thinking myself. Was that things just kind of got off to a bad start? He rubbed some people the wrong way, and his style was a style that was going to take a while because Michigan had been a certain type of team forever. And to turn that culture and to change that tide, especially when people had seen success with that particular style, it just didn't seem like it was destined to struggle for a while.
And what I said is, if you look at the people, if you look at Carr's last team, the team right after Rodriguez took over, look at how many kids. It tells you what you just said. How many of those players are in the league?
Mm-hmm.
And you got guys. Who played on his last team? Plenty of guys on defense and offense who are in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Because they always have the talent. So I think that's why people struggle. So it was never about the talent. It almost about the style. It was about the intensity. And they just needed a coach to raise the intensity. Carr didn't raise the intensity, but they had everything else in place.
Mm-hmm.
You broke it all down. So it wasn't like you threw everything out. They felt like you threw the baby out with the bathwater and the milk.
The tub and everything. You ripped everything out the wall.
So my feeling is it's done deal. You know, they're just waiting after the bowl game to announce it.
So you heard it here first. Rich Rod is going to be out in Ann Arbor and A-Squared. He's going to be out of there. So we'll see how that plays out. Another game I had, Alabama versus Michigan State. And after this one, I wrote down, does Michigan State belong with the big boys? And this is going to be that test. This could be, you know what? What this reminds me of is that point in the mid to late 90s where Michigan was coming off the run with the Fab Five, They was coming off that run with the 5-5, and then they got hit with them sanctions. They got rid of Fisher. Amaker came in, and they were just kind of in that limbo state as far as whether or not they were going to remain a top program. And that's when Michigan State gained a ton of steam. And they gained a ton of steam, and they started to lock down all those recruiting hotbeds in Michigan.
That's right.
That they had lost a little bit during that Wolverine run. And could that be happening again in football now where Michigan State seizing that opportunity to lock down some of those old fertile grounds in Ohio, get some of those Michigan kids to come there instead of going to Ann Arbor because Ann Arbor is just a mess right now.
That's right.
And, you know, this could mirror what happened in basketball, which helped Michigan State get back on top. And kind of push Michigan down, and Michigan still is trying to get back up in basketball, but you could see that tide turning in football also.
Yeah. And what I would say in the biggest backstory to this is, you know, back to the future, Saban, you know, coached at Michigan State. So, you know, this is going to have all kinds of storylines, you know, going up against his old school, another one of his old schools, that, you know, most people don't remember that he coached at Michigan State before going to LSU. And so that's got a little storyline to it. But, you know, where you're going to see, and this is where you're going to see, and I think it may be a great thing for the Big Ten, is Michigan State defense has got a great linebacking core. And this is going to be a hard-hitting affair. One thing about State, even when they were struggling, you always came, teams left those games limping. Whenever you play State, they could be 5-6. The teams, Notre Dame, I remember all these teams, they play a team like State because they always play physical and always hit. Wasn't always disciplined, but always had great athletes and always playing physical hit. So now they got a coach that was got them to be disciplined and still maintain its physical play. And in some ways, Michigan State plays a lot like an SEC team, especially from that linebacking core with Jones and company. So you're going to see some physical play. This is going to be a good game. This is going to be hard hitting. And, you know, Julio Jones, they're going to be getting up on him. And then Michigan State got some firepower. So this is going to, as one of the better matchups, you know, that's the hard thing about just having the, you know, the BCS Bowls and some of these other things. But this is going to be a great matchup, Alabama and Michigan State. I don't know who's going to win. I'm going to wait to predict that one. But it's going to be a physical game. It's going to be one of the better matchups in the bowl season.
Well, we're going to have to check that out. Again, I think this could be very big for Michigan State if they can pull out a victory against a team the caliber of Alabama, a team whose name carries weight. You know, as they say on the wire, Alabama rings out on the streets. You know, that name rings out corner to corner.
That's right.
You know, and if you can knock off of Alabama, you know, you could really establish yourself as somebody to be reckoned with, and that'll put you on the radar of a lot of recruits across the country. If you can go out there and show you can beat in Alabama. So this could be a turning point game for that program as to, you know, whether or not this is one of those traditional Michigan State blips where they have a good year and disappear for 3 or 4 years, then have another good year. This could be that turning point, and this is the time for them to seize that opportunity. So we'll see how that plays out.
And also Ingram's from Michigan too.
Mm-hmm. Is he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he grew up in Flint.
Oh, Flintstone.
Yeah, I believe Flint or Saginaw. Yeah, Ingram's from Michigan. So, you know, I think that might play at State. But, yeah, he played for the Giants, but I think Ingram definitely from Michigan. But he grew up in Michigan.
Wow.
So, that's that, you know. So you got a lot of you know, storylines going to be in this. You know, kids who know him, you know. So it's going to be, you know, they matched this one up pretty good. They select whoever, you know. This is a good pairing.
Oh yeah, that is a good pairing. That is a good pairing. Then the next game I got on docket is Wisconsin versus TCU. And behind this one, I wrote something's got to give. You got one of the hottest teams in the country in Wisconsin. Versus a TCU team with a big-ass chip on their shoulder. You got one of the top offenses. You got in the last 20-some years, this is the second-highest-scoring Big Ten team ever.
sense.
Behind Penn State's team with Bobby Engram and Kajana Carter and Kerry Collins, when they first came into the Big Ten, this team is the second highest scoring team in Big Ten history. Going up against one of the nation's best defenses, has been one of the nation's best defenses for the last 3 or 4 years. And both teams have I think, a lot to prove. I think you got two programs with chips on their shoulders. The Badgers are trying to prove that they belong amongst college. And I think this is their opportunity to prove that they belong amongst college football's elite. And this is also TCU's chance to prove that they belong. And so something's got to give.
I love the way you put that. It's going to be physical, and it's going to be right at that line of scrimmage. I mean, you're talking about, you know, a veteran offensive line in Wisconsin and, you know, great defensive line in the front seven. You know, so it's going to be physical. I mean, this is a great matchup. I was trying to figure out how I felt about it. It's a great matchup. And, you know, this is for the Wisconsin side is where, you know, someone like Tolzien, you're going to see where the maturity is because he got to make some plays, you know, through the air. And, you know, this receiving corps is going to have to come up with some, you know, some matchups with the tight end. And this is where that game planning that you see the Badgers doing is going to come together. So this is going to be a really physical game. It's going to be a great day. You know, you got to, you know, you got to get that popcorn ready, as T.O. would say. It's going to be hard hitting. I'm looking forward to this one. You know, this is another one of those, you know, because in some ways it's not, you know, it's like TCU against Power Conference, but it is. But like you said, this is about respect because even though Wisconsin's in a Power Conference, was, you know, you if you look, you know, you hear Brett talk about it, he doesn't believe that people really respect them as one of these elite programs. And so, yeah, we're in a Power Conference, but we fight for respect just like you are. So it doesn't have that kind of like, it's not TCU against Alabama. You know, it's not TCU against LSU. It's not TCU against Oklahoma. It's not TCU against Texas. You know, some of these people come in already getting they swagger stamped on.
Mm-hmm.
Another big program that's still got a lot to prove. I feel like they got a lot to prove. So you're right. This is you know, both coaches are going to be talking like everybody's against them.
Yep.
I realize, you know, nobody can mouthpiece it like Brett. He'll make you. By the time you're done, it'll be us against the world. So this is going to be an interesting game.
Yeah. So the next game I got is Florida, the Gators versus the Nittany Lions of Penn State University. And after this one, I wrote, what the hell happened here? I mean, like, these are two programs, you know, that in the last 5 or 6 years have been near the top. And they both had a rough-ass year this year. And so that's why, you know, that was my initial reaction is, I almost forgot about both of these programs this year because they had been so out of the mix. And I thought it was just a little bit comical that they wind up having to play each other. So, you know, Florida's had a down year. I mean, you lose a leader like Tebow. And, you know, for all of the people that dislike Tim Tebow, I don't care how you feel about him, the kid could lead. He could lead the locker room. Like possibly no other guy we've seen in a while in college football. And when that type of leadership gets sucked out, there's going to be drop-off. But I didn't think it was going to be this damn steep. So, you know, and the talent is still there, and I think this is just a misstep for Florida, just as I think Texas is here this year was a misstep. I think both of those programs will be right back where they need to be within the next few years. I really was surprised that they fell off this hard. And the same with Penn State. You know, I thought that they would be able to play better. I think they got some bad bounces during the Big Ten season. And again, I think, you know, when people talk about Boise State, this is what they talk about. With these teams, with a Florida and a Penn State, a few bad plays, a few bad series here and there throughout their season, it's the difference between being 9-3 and 7-5. And I think both of these teams probably have 9-3 talent, but they had young teams. They were young at key positions. and 9-3 wound up being 7-5, and it's that easy. When you play in one of these power conferences where every week you're getting tested, and you're getting tested hard. And I think that's why these two teams are in the position that they're in, facing off against one another in one of these lesser bowls.
I'm very scared for Penn State because sometimes it's just bad matchups. And so people put these games together because these teams will travel well. But I just feel like, you know, even though Penn State, you know, found a backup quarterback who, you know, helped make some games competitive, I just feel like for Florida, this is like the kickoff to next year's season. And that's how you're going to spin it. And, you know, this is where that these, you know, 20 days or 30 days of practice where they start working on the first year, start having open competition. You know, I think Meyer's going to have real open competition. You know, people are going to be competing for playing time for this ball game. And this is almost going to be like a kickoff for him next year. And I just, for some reason, I just feel, and I might be wrong, I just feel like, boy, this could, I wouldn't be surprised if this ended up being a 20, 25, 30 point game. And Joe Paul is sitting on the sideline looking confused. Like, somebody forgot to bring me my medicine. I don't know why, but when you said that matchup, I'm just like, damn, it don't look good for Penn State. For some reason, even though they're both, like you said, probably 9-3 teams, I just think that in terms of their development, they're at different spots. I feel like a month of practice, this team for Florida is going to be at a different place. Like, they're almost getting ready for next season. And they're going to be, you know, it's going to be like a, you know, kind of a prelude to what you're going to see next season when he gets them on the field. Whereas I just feel like Penn State may be 2 or 3 steps behind them. I just don't know why I feel that way, but I'm scared. And maybe I'm going to be wrong, you know, about this. But I just feel like something's got to give, and it's not going to be close.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this one plays out because, I agree with you. I would feel a little bad for Penn State because I still think Florida has some of those elite-level athletes at other spots. I think they were young at quarterback, and that hurt them. But I think at their other spots, they're still fast as hell. And speaking of fast as hell, the last game I got is Oregon versus Auburn. And what I wrote after this is, who you got? Who you taking? I mean, this is fast break versus fast break. I mean, these teams play fast football. And watching Oregon, they've been able to wear teams down all season with that fast pace. They've been one of the best fourth quarter teams in the country. And, you know, even my wife, when we sat down and watched Oregon play against Arizona, and she was just like, their players seem faster than the other team's players. I don't know which team is supposed to be better, but I know Oregon's players seem like they're way faster than Arizona players. And that was an observation she made on her own. She was just like, they look faster than other teams. And I think it's true. You know, the eyeball, you know, the uneducated eyeball can tell you a lot, you know, when you're watching a sporting event, just about general perception. Oregon's fast as hell. This is a fast team. And they play fast. They push the tempo. It's like the 6 seconds or less Phoenix Suns, where they push the tempo at a breakneck pace, like I don't think any other program in college football, and they do it at a level with athletes that I don't think you've seen before. I think there have been other teams that have pushed the pace quickly and sped up the game, but I think they did it because they didn't have the athletes to just line up and play against you. But I think Oregon has will go against teams, and they have had the better athletes, and they've played and executed better at a much quicker pace than teams they're used to playing at, which is why they just beat the dog doo out of a lot of teams. But at the same time, Auburn got the golden boy. They got Cam, and it's hard for me to go against Cam. So I decided I'm taking Auburn in this. And the reason I'm going with Auburn partly is just a rule I have, a general rule I got. And that's, you go undefeated in the SEC, you bad. You know, and whether you call it a down year in the SEC or not, I don't think it was very much of a down year. I think it seemed like that way at the beginning of the season, but, you know, LSU, Auburn, Arkansas, Alabama, South Carolina, all were legit teams. All were legit teams and would be at the top of any other conference and involved in any other conference's championship race. And for Auburn to go through that gauntlet, come out unscathed, but then also to win games the way they won games in close, close games, games with close scores. Oregon hasn't had to do that this year. They've been beating the brains, they've been beating the brakes off people all year. And it'll be interesting to see how Oregon responds to a team that can play as fast as they can, has similar athletes to them, but also has been battle-tested and played under pressure late, where Oregon, a lot of games, has been resting their starters in the fourth quarter because they've been just blowing people out. So I'm going with Auburn because I think Auburn has that advantage, that mental advantage of being in tough games week in and week out, having to come from behind, having to, you know, play in a brutal conference. Not that the Pac-10 is weak, but the Pac-10 ain't the SEC. So I'm going with Auburn.
You know, if you look at what happened with Oregon over the past couple of weeks, you know, they've had some people kind of slowing them down a little bit. You know, the Oregon State game.
Yeah, cats faking injuries and stuff.
Yeah. whatever they had doing, they figured something out. And I think Auburn's going to bring some of those athletes, and they got a very disruptive defensive line that I think is going to – I think it's going to be a close game in everything else. But I just think part of the control of Oregon is that Auburn is going to have the ball and Canada will keep advancing them chains. And they're gonna be wearing them out. And part of the thing is just gonna keep them on the sidelines. And but yeah, I'm feeling Auburn. I haven't quite made my final prediction. I'm leaning towards Cam, and I think as we get closer to the championship game, I'll have a better feel. But I am leaning. I'm leaning towards Auburn on this, slightly.
Okay, slightly. So slightly leaning towards Auburn. All right. Again, if you want to get on with us and join this conversation, feel free to call in at 1-347-989-0844. We're both taking Auburn. I'm taking Auburn big. He's taking Auburn slightly. I think it'll be a close game. I'm going hard on Auburn. I don't think Auburn is going to blow out Oregon. I think it'll be a close game, and I think because it's a close game, Auburn will have the advantage because I think they've been in that situation more than Oregon, and they've been in that situation against tough competition more than Oregon has. I don't think Oregon hasn't been in a close game this year with a team the caliber of Auburn, where Auburn has probably played more close games against teams with similar caliber players and similar level of talent that Oregon has. So I give the edge to Auburn in that scenario. So, you know, that's what I got for college football, man. So it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. You know, it will be what it will be, right? I mean, we'll come back on next Tuesday, a week from now, and we'll digest it all. Again, as we get closer and closer to the games, different things will start to pop up. We'll hear different stories coming out of different schools about what's going on, and we'll keep you guys up to date on all of that. That's what we're here for, you know, Real Sports Guys Radio, Renegade Radio. We're about to jump into our NFL talk about the most important league in the world. Again, if you want to get on, call us 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to get on. These last 30 minutes are dedicated to the league, and we just got to jump in and talk about, you know, there was a big game. There was a couple big games this week, quite a few big games, actually. We had the Ravens and the Steelers, the Jets and the Patriots, and both of those games were – interesting. One game turned out to be what we thought it was going to be, and that was the Steelers and the Ravens game. And then one game, didn't go so quite well for one of the teams. We're going to talk about that game first. The Jets got demolished by the Patriots on Monday Night Football. Right now, Rex Brian is sitting somewhere with a bib on. He got a fork in one hand, a spoon in the other hand, and that man is digging into some humble pie. A serious help in a humble pie right now, because you know, the Jets gonna talk a good game. That's just who they are, and I love that about that team. And I think, you know, all leagues need a team that's gonna do that and gonna talk and just give people a reason to dislike them. I like that. So you know, I'm not mad at them for talking, but damn, they got their ass beat.
Yeah, and what I want to say about this, and I've been saying this for the past couple of weeks, and I remember Ray getting on me, he's not here to defend himself, but I said when they got rid of Randy Moss, I said New England would be dangerous because they would go back to their early days of how and their offense, where it was Brady and you really couldn't game plan because you didn't know where they were going. That's where they're the most dangerous, whereas you could they became one-dimensional. Trying to go vertical all the time, and hadn't really, you know. Now they got the tight end game, and you know, so part of that, and the part that stepped up was the defense. You didn't anticipate the defense playing at this level, but I anticipated Brady letting this offense grow. And what was good about this? This said more about, because I always felt the Jets. The one thing we used to have this conversation about who's the premier, and I think one thing I started feeling about the Jets is that. Sanchez is still a second-year quarterback. And at some point, he's got to make plays. And the more you can make, some days he's going to look good, some days he's going to look terrible. And the other day, he looked terrible. But they don't have enough. He can't exploit the strengths they got. Santonio Holmes, they can't get the ball to him. Braylon's not come up. You know, some players are not, other than Santonio, some of these other players are not helping him out enough. And so you just saw a totally dismantle. And then the defense fell off, which was the most important crumble of all. That to give up 45 points, you know, they just totally – and I was like, man, is Leonard that important? You know, the Wisconsin player, is he that important to the defense? And maybe he is the quarterback. Maybe he's like Polamalu, you know. But they just crumbled. You know, Brady saw everything coming. Now, Steve Young got a little too romantic. I thought he was going to ask Brady to marry him. you know, he started talking about artistry, and I'm like, man, come on now. You're like, you about to have a moment with yourself up there. You got lost.
He said, you want us to leave?
I'm like, can we just leave? Why you just do all this stuff? But I have to say, Belichick and Brady and this team is really making it work. And again, it's like I said before, you know, when all you're throwing is that left hook, when you go up against somebody like New England who knows how to isolate your hook and take it away and force you to go some other punch, can you go? And what the Jets told us yesterday against elite teams, kind of like what we said about, you know, they kind of like the basketball, the football version of Miami. They can beat up on the weak teams, right? But can they play against the other teams where they got to go to more than one move? And right now, I'm not sure if they can do that. You know, Rex just looked crazy at the press conference. He started out being very reflective, and then by the end of it, he was mad. This morning, he was mad. We'll line up again. That's the only thing. I'm like, man, you talking like you're crazy.
See, that's that pissed off talking. That's that pissed off talking. The more you start thinking about it, the more you start thinking, damn it, man, they kicked our ass.
Belichick was all calm. We were so happy.
Hey, man, I see it all the time, man. I work in a middle school, man. And what happens when you get two kids who get into it was like two kids that got into a fight. The kids that think he won the fight is all good. He's good with letting it go. He's good with not carrying the issue on no more. He's like, you know what? I'll let it ride. You know, I'm good. You know, it's over for me. That's what the kid will say. That's Belichick. Rex Ryan was the kid who got his ass beat. And the kid who got his ass beat always wants them all. They ain't giving they holding a grudge. They want to fight again. They want to keep getting after it. They're not taking no for an answer. They're not trying to reconcile. They're not trying to see no mediation. They want to go at it again. It just look crazy. And that's what Rex was. Rex was that middle school kid that got his ass beat, and he want to fight again right now.
You know, because, I mean, they're figuring out the game. I mean, you know, they're going to all-out blitz. They're not getting pressure on the quarterback. So defensively, you know, they're not doing what they need to do, and that's everything to them. And then offensively, they're not dominating that line of scrimmage. They're not running that football to create that play-action pass. And so you take those things away. You know, my defensive coordinator used to always tell us back in high school when we went state championship run, he was like, we're going to take away your top three or four plays. We're going to take what you do, and then what you going to do after that? And that's basically what New England did. Like, we're going to take away Sanchez. We take away the top three things y'all want to do. What you going to do now? You're not advanced. You're only an honors program. You're not in A right now. You know, you can't get ready. We take you to
you're high-level remedial courses.
Oh, that's right. We take you to the deep water. Can you swim? That's what Tom was like. Come on in the deep water with me. And, you know, and Rex was mad. He kept swimming out there and realized he's out in the middle. He's like, oh, no, we got to go back. Too late.
Too late.
The big waves are coming.
Sharks are circling.
I just watched I watched the press conference just watching him melt down. I was like, damn.
Yeah.
That's over here melting down on me. Come on now. Get your composure. He was like, and he was still in shock. He was like, I can't believe he, like you said, I can't believe he slapped me in the face like that.
For real. Oh, no, I want another shot at that. I want another shot. I think I can take you.
And Sanchez, you know, he did what he had to do. I mean, he took the blame for her and whatever, and that, you know, he didn't lead. And he's got, what, 11 interceptions, what, over the last, what, you know, five or six games or whatever it might be for you. He turned that ball over. And,
yep.
You know, he's got to take care of the ball. So I don't know where they are. I don't see them winning. You know, don't talk to me about the Jets being an elite team.
Oh, that might ruffle some feathers. That might ruffle some feathers out there in radio land.
So, yeah, the Jets, don't talk to me about it. I mean, they're a work in progress. Don't talk Super Bowl. Don't talk any of that. Because you don't get – you know, it don't come out saying, well, the biggest loss I knew, you know, try and talk about the Bears losing in Miami. Come on. Y'all not the Bears. You know, you're not.
They're not the 85 Bears?
Yeah, you're not Wilbur Marshall. Y'all ain't got that kind of pressure. Y'all ain't got those kind of dogs right now. Some of your dogs are hurt. Y'all playing with puppies. hey, you ain't got Jim McMahon.
They got Scrappy Doo out there. They don't got Scooby. They got Scrappy.
You ain't got Walter. You got LT, but he ain't Walter Payton. And so, yeah, I mean, I think he's reaching right now, but they're not put together for that. And they don't want no more parts of Belichick. Just someone was saying today, they can do this and hope that they don't have to see him again and they can get to the Super Bowl. Maybe they can, because the Steelers and the Ravens play more of a smash-mouth football and that kind of stuff, you know. Maybe they want to see them again, but, you know, right now, this year, you don't want no more parts of the Patriots.
Hey, Brady got them digits. You got that number.
Oh, yeah. Y'all won one in terms of y'all games this year, but it's really 2-1 because this was worth two whoopings.
Yeah, this was. This was a psychological beatdown more than anything. This was, guess what? It's late in the season, and we just beat y'all. We just gave it to you. And ain't nothing you can do about it at this point, but hope that you see us again, or hope that you don't see us again if you're smart. But, yeah, the Jets caught one. And then we had the Steelers and the Ravens. You know, you mentioned them as far as being elite. Man, that game was – you figured it was going to be like a 10-6 game. You figured it was going to be a low-scoring game in the low teens, and that's what it was. And you had to, you know, everybody was coming away from this game with a bloody nose. I'm talking about the coaches, the equipment manager, the owners elbowing each other up in the booth. This is just one of those kind of rivalries where everybody hates everybody. I'm talking about from the guy that sells hot dogs to the highest paid player on the field. Everybody's coming away from this one hurting. I mean, I was listening to it on the radio. I was running some errands, and I'm listening to the game on the radio. And after every play, the radio announcer was like, and there's a scrum. And there's another scuffle. And a fight broke out. After every single play for about a series and a half, a fight broke out after every play, and it was early in the game, and both teams were trying to establish themselves, and both teams were taking a stand, like, nah, we're not going to take that. And both teams were trying to get that physical and mental edge on one another. And it was just interesting to hear that play out over the radio. As you have this announcer constantly describing these scrums and scuffles and trying to figure out who's involved, it was actually pretty entertaining to hear because it's like these dudes are really trying to kill each other right now.
Well, all you had to do was look at Ben's nose to know what kind of game it was.
Yeah.
His nose, I was like on one side of his face, still trying to figure out. They did end up finding, was it McLean or something like that, for his hit on Heath Miller. But, you know, it was a physical game. You know, the Steelers stole one. You know, it's 1-1. I love Tomlin. Tomlin just was in there. You could tell he just loved it. You know, Harbaugh, you know, he's fam from, you know, our brother. You know, we had to talk about that, about John. It's, you know, but, you know, when they play the Steelers, he's just going to have to just take it on the chin. That's how football's supposed to be played. I listened to Tom Jackson talking about that game and anticipating the game. And he said, you know, league has created it, rules so that they can create the high scoring. And a lot of people like the high scoring, but he's like, you know, I'm a traditionalist. he's like, this is what I like, you know, knowing that it's going to be 13-10, it's going to be the best kind of game you ever watch. And he was right. I mean, I watched that game, I was just like, man, this is straight up heavyweight fight.
I'm a football fundamentalist.
That's it. So, you know, and these teams are going, they setting the tone, you know. You know, these are two teams that are going to have to reckon with when it comes to the playoffs. So, you know, people better buckle it up. And Flacco made some big plays out there. He did miss Polamalu on that blitz. That's just a great scheme. I mean, you can't really even blame him. I mean, sometimes it's just a great call. And Polamalu doing what he does, you know, the Superman on folks. But it was, you know, that kind of game. So, you know,
so here's a question I want to pose to you as a Steelers fan, and I want you to try to answer this as objectively as possible. Thinking about the greatest safeties that have ever played, where do you put Polamalu?
Ooh.
Is he in the top? Is he cracking the top 10? Is he cracking the top 5? Because, and the reason I ask, and the reason I'm even posing this question, is because when Polamalu isn't on the field, the Steelers' defense is average. When he is on the field, they are upper echelon, elite.
Well,
and
I mean, I think
he makes so many plays for them.
I mean, you got Ed Reed and you got Polamalu on the field. Probably, you know, they got to be in the conversation along with the Ronnie Lotts of the world. And I mean, you got some, you know, great safeties throughout history that you put in there. But I think Polamalu, when it's all said and done, you have to put him in that, you know, top 10, top 5, because he not only comes up and makes plays and can hit and can close and on the line of scrimmage, you can put him out there, but he can cover. He covers a lot of ground. I mean, the cat runs, what, about a 4-3 or something like that? I mean, so he covers a lot of ground. I mean, he'll start a lot of scrimmage and he'll end up back in the deep third. So just the things, that's why you can do so much with him, because he can cover so much range on the field. He'll start on one side of the field and he'll be covering the other side third. So, I mean, he does allow you to do so much with that defense. And I think when it's all said and done, that's where he's going to end up. And if you look at the stat they had since 2000, where that defense has been ranked, in most of the categories, they've been first or second. And, you know, he's been that safety for most of those years. And so, I mean, when you're talking about longevity, you're talking about a dominant defense over a period of time, you know, especially if they win another Super Bowl. He's got to go down in there. But, you know, you got to consider the Ronnie Lotts of the world and folks like that who could cover and who could hit and who could do, you know. And that's what I like, those safeties.
safeties who could still cover, could come up on the run, you know, could play. You know, you got some safeties that could hit a lot, like Atwater, over the time that we've probably been watching. So you've always had safeties like that who you could put down in the box, but could they cover? And you know, in my time, you know, Pop Miles got to be up there.
Yeah, I agree, man. I agree. I think, you know, the brother's got to be, he's got to be in that top crew, man.
I would say to you, how many times have you said in one game two safeties who are going to be in the Hall of Fame? Ed Reed's another guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, in that one game, you got two safeties. I mean, besides some of the other players who are Hall of Famers, like, you know, but just two safeties right there, both of them are probably going to end up Hall of Famers.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and if you counted up the Hall of Famers on that field as far as the defensive side of the ball, I mean, you're looking at Ray Lewis from the Steelers side of the ball. I think eventually, you know, a guy like Casey Hampton should eventually get called to the Hall at some point. You know, James Harrison has to have a little bit more longevity to what he's doing. But, you know, you got three surefire Hall of Famers and then one possible. And, you know, and that's not even including some of the younger guys the Ravens have, like Haloti Ngata and Terrell Suggs, who, again, if they can maintain a high level of play for a longer period of time, you can see them being talked about as possible Hall of Famers. But these units both of these units have been playing at an elite level for a very long time.
Very long time. Yeah, I mean, in that, you know, and as long as you can be sound like that, you always got a chance to win. And, you know, I still think, you know, the Steelers have got to – I mean, one of the good things about Roethlisberger's injury was that they did commit more to the run. And I think that's something they got to continue to see. But that's one of the things I can appreciate about Baltimore, that they do have that strong commitment to the run. And Flacco is beginning to make those plays. He got those receivers. So, I mean, you know, they look at the stats that they met the last, whatever, four or five times or whatever it might be. They're, you know, pretty much been even. They both have scored 67 points.
Like, yeah.
67 points total, you know, over that time. And that's an incredible stat. So, I mean,
yep.
No series has been as close or even. I mean, it's as this series, so. That to me is an incredible game.
Yeah, it was a fun game to watch, to listen to. However you took it in, I think you probably walked away thinking, man, that was enjoyable. You know, and hopefully we get to see, you know, a Final Four in the AFC of the Jets, Patriots, Steelers, and Ravens all playing against each other, some combination. I could care less about who's playing who. I think they would all be very fun games to watch and enjoy. And I think those are going to be some really good playoff games. Now, looking at this NFC playoff picture, this is where it gets real interesting right now, because you got three spots that are I would debate are still kind of up for grabs, and you got four teams competing for those three spots. The three spots I'm talking about is the NFC North champ, the NFC East champ, and then the last wild card spot. And you got four teams competing for those spots. You got Chicago, Philly, New York, and Green Bay, which as of today, if Green Bay, who is still picked by a lot of experts as a Super Bowl contender, as of today, they wouldn't even be in the playoffs. As of today, Green Bay would not be in the playoffs. One of the hottest teams in the league wouldn't be in the playoffs and with an 8-4 record.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But you got St. Louis at 6-6 running the NFC West. You got Philly, Chicago, and then you got New York, New Orleans, and Atlanta all sitting in that playoff picture right now. Now, Chicago and Green Bay still play on the last weekend of the season, and if Green Bay wins that game, if both teams win out throughout the rest of the season and Green Bay wins that game, they hold the tiebreaker. So then Green Bay would get the would win the NFC North, and then Chicago may be on the outside looking in. Then you got New York and Philly going back and forth, and I think they still have one more time to play. I'm not sure exactly when. I'm going to check that out in a second. But they, I think they still, let me see, schedule for the Eagles. So, yeah, they still have one more time to play. They play in Week 15 in New York. So that's going to be another interesting division to see how that plays out when you have those two teams battling. So those two spots are up for grabs. And then you have New York and Green Bay kind of battling each other, or New York and Chicago or Philadelphia and Green Bay or whoever battling for that last playoff spot, which it looks like you're going to have to be about 11-5 this year. You know, so you may have an 11-5 team that doesn't make the playoffs this year, which, I mean, is unbelievable. That happened to the Patriots a couple years back where they were 11-5 and missed the playoffs when Castle was the starting quarterback. But it's rare that you win 11 games and you don't make the playoffs, but this could be one of those years. So that race is shaping up to be real interesting, because then you're going to have a St. Louis team or a Seattle team. Or a San Francisco team. I think San Francisco may have kind of really put themselves out of it at this point. But you got Seattle and St. Louis who are hanging in there, who could sneak into the playoffs. And, you know, if things go the way they could, a team like Tampa Bay could sneak in. They're 7-5. If they went out, they finish up 11-5. So it's possible that they could sneak into the playoffs. Right now I'm counting New Orleans and Atlanta as probably surefires to get in. I think New Orleans has a fairly decent schedule down the stretch. And I think Atlanta's pretty much locked in right now. They got a pretty favorable schedule also. So I'm looking at both of those teams as probably getting in, and I think those other spots are up for grabs, and there's some pretty high competition for them. What's your take on how all that plays out?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, what's killing it is you got both Atlanta and New Orleans who are just, you know, doing their thing. And so one of them are going to get, both of them are probably going to get in. So, yeah, that cuts it out. And then you got what's happening out there in the NFC West that is going to, kill it. You can't imagine the fact that Green Bay might not make the playoffs given how they play. I mean, we're just talking about the Jets, and they just thoroughly dominated the Jets. They might not even make the playoffs here. So I tell you how the power off the NFL may be shifting. You know, we might be watching it shift a little bit. Atlanta's had some success against some of the AFC teams. And so we're beginning to see, probably a little bit of shift here across the NFL. I think I'm still not buying into the Giants. I don't know why I'm not. Just don't see the consistency. And so maybe I'm thinking Green Bay might take that spot. I think Chicago is for real. You know, as long as they can keep Cutler clean and making some simple decisions, but that defense is looking good. And, they're certainly going to get their test this week against New England. That'll tell us a lot about them. But I think they're going to be the first team in a while that's going to give New England a run for their money. It's just something about how they're playing. You can see that swagger that got them going to the Super Bowl coming back. And they found a formula to kind of keep Cutler under control, which everybody knew if you could do, they could make things happen. So, yeah, I'm thinking – looking at Atlanta, Chicago, Philadelphia, I think they'll stay. St. Louis will probably hold on. I mean, they just got the right foundation. And I actually would like to see them make the playoffs, so hopefully they can maintain the spot that they have. New Orleans will obviously make it. And then I'm thinking right now it's the Giants, but I think Green Bay might sneak in and take that spot. Because I just think with Dallas getting better and some other things happening in the NFC East, that Giants may stumble a couple of times down the stretch here with some of these teams, and they might be on the outside looking in. I just feel like they should be on the outside looking in. There should be some turmoil in New York.
you know, Coughlin under fire, and you know, it just feels like it should be that way. With Green Bay making a run as a wild card team, that's how I think they'll play. On the AFC side, man, it's, you know, beyond these top six teams, it looked like pea soup. You got Indianapolis looking crazy, and we haven't talked about Peyton Manning with them four interceptions and how he's been throwing.
Yeah, he's on the rundown. He's on the rundown. You know, yeah. Peyton is looking un-Peyton like. I mean, I've never seen it. He hasn't played this bad since his rookie year.
Yeah, he's struggling and just looking terrible. And, you know, what's going to happen in Houston if they don't make the playoffs again? I mean, at some point they might make some decisions there. San Diego losing last week at home. Oakland has been a surprise. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs, I called that early on, and who knew?
Yeah. Well, I would take credit, but I half-heartedly called Atlanta as possibly the best, one of the best teams in the league early on, and everybody laughed at me, and I didn't quite believe it myself either. I was just saying some shit. But they turned out to be all right, so, you know, that's how it goes sometimes.
I mean, you got Jacksonville. I mean, I just don't know what to say about, you know, parity is, you know, they talk about NFL and parity. It's there.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It absolutely is, because in any given moment you can look up and you still – I mean, at this point you still don't know what to think of the top teams. I mean, New England is 10-2 and Atlanta is 10-2. And Atlanta's starting to solidify themselves, and we're starting to get an idea of who they are. And they're starting to look like, you know, they're a legit 10-2 team. And as are the Patriots, but still, the Patriots, I think what makes you question the Patriots is that you know Pittsburgh is coming. You know the Jets are still viable. You know Baltimore is coming. You know they got to go through those teams. And
like you said, as much as I could talk about New England, I could see them playing Kansas City in the first round and losing.
Yeah.
You know, I could do that. In Atlanta, I feel like it's like Cinderella. You know, for some reason, I just feel like they Cinderella, and that pumpkin might show up on them. You know, they're the kind of team to be the best team. You know, the best team. You know, in the division, had a first playoff game or had the bye, and then that next game lose, which has happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can see that happening. So you're right. You don't know who these people are because they all got flaws.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's the thing. That, you know, I that's the biggest thing I see right now is that it's still hard to settle in on who I think is who I think is gonna make a real good run right now, because everybody's got some serious flaws and some serious drawbacks. So it'll be interesting to see which way to how the cookie crumbles in this situation.
New England beating New York by 45-3, it's kind of like the Gary Payton Sonics winning a game on a Thursday night against the Lakers by 20.
Yeah.
It was an impressive victory, but it still wasn't the playoffs.
Exactly. It ain't the time for those. You know, you do that in January, we think about it differently. It has a different meaning than doing it in early December. So,
yeah.
You know, the playoff pitch is starting to shape up for some teams. And then you got teams that's not in the playoffs. And you got teams that are going to be looking at coaching changes. Damn Cincinnati. That's all I can say. You know, what happened to Cincinnati? You know, y'all talk about winning Madden Super Bowls and all types of stuff with Ocho and T.O. And hell, I drank the Kool-Aid for a minute. It was good. It was orange. The orange Kool-Aid tastes all right. But what the hell happened?
But now, are
they 10?
Are they talking about Marv Lewis just not accepting his extension?
I don't know. Is that what's out there?
For some reason, somebody was saying that. You know, in Denver, you know, you got Josh McDaniels got fired.
Yep.
You know, that was just a bad fit. And it's, you know, they're talking about that today. And part of it is, you know, young coaches coming in. And when Josh McDaniels, I always felt like
he felt like he had to prove he was tough to his players rather than just coming in and assuming leadership, like a Thomas, you know, just kind of walking in and this is how it's going to be and you just roll. You know, it's like he had to really flex on some people to do it. And you got to keep talent. And when you start letting that much talent go out the door and you don't replace it, I mean, when you replace, you get a number one draft pick, and usually your number one draft pick got to be on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your number one draft pick, we don't even know what to say about him. I mean, he just made so many bad decisions that I think are just coming back to haunt him. And, you know, what they're going to do in Denver, I mean, they're talking about the Air Force coach, but, you know, I know they don't want to spend the money, but, you know, they might have to, you know, look for a Gruden, or they got to do something out there to get the...
Yeah. And maybe that's not a bad spot for Bill Cowher to come in, because they, I mean, right now, Matt Daniels has a lot of the executive control as far as making some of the personnel decisions. So it doesn't seem like the ownership team there is against giving a coach that type of leeway. They're just coming off the Shanahan era, and he had that kind of control over the team. So, you know, that could be a situation that where a Cowher may be interested. One thing I want to go back to real quick, given our conversation about college quarterbacks, is the situation in Cincinnati. Right now, Cincinnati is 2-10. They're 2-10. Carolina's 1-11. Detroit is 2-10. Right? So let's say things play out the way they have played out thus far, and Cincinnati is looking at the third pick in the draft or fourth pick in the draft. That's a situation where this may be it for Carson Palmer. That's a situation where Andrew Luck, because if Carolina's pick, they just invested in Jimmy Clausen. They're not going to take a quarterback early. Detroit is invested in Stafford. They're not taking a quarterback. So that number one pick either now gets traded. You have to trade up and get the quarterback you want. Or you sit and wait for Andrew Luck to fall to 3 or 4, and then Cincinnati takes him. Or if Buffalo takes Andrew Luck, Cincinnati takes Cam Newton or somebody like that. But this could spell the end for Carson Palmer. And it went downhill quick.
Yeah, it went downhill real quick. And, he just seemed to deteriorate with the surroundings. And it almost feels like he just needs to change the scenery. I don't feel like he's done. I just think he needs to change the scenery. I think the atmosphere around Cincinnati, I think it's just taking a toll on him. You know, the lack of structure, discipline, a whole bunch of things. I just think it's just so much. It's been a circus there for so long. I think it's just taking a toll on him. Because I still feel like he got something in the tank. I feel like he got something left in the tank. And maybe he just needs to have a change of scenery. This might be a good trade option. But you're right. I think Marv is going to move on, and he probably going to move on. But what you going to do now? You got Ocho, and you got I mean, you got a young
player. Yeah, you. If I'm a quarterback, I'm not signing up for that. I might as well go ahead and work in the Saints house. Sign me up to work at Arkham, Bellevue, or someplace, man. I ain't going into that huddle with them nutcases, man.
But
everybody asking for the ball.
Yeah, it's like, you know, how fast can it turn on somebody? Because a few years ago, he was on top of the world.
Yeah.
And now he's struggling. So, yeah, it could be the end. You know, that might not be a bad thing for him.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's time to move on. You know, if he's thinking about moving on, there's a lot of places I can see him going. We got about a minute left. That's our theme music getting going. I'm gonna send it to D for his final thought, and we're gonna let it all ride out. Go ahead, D.
I'm gonna say this, that you know, Mike Tyson was just inducted to the International Boxing Association Hall of Fame, and along with Chavez and Stallone. How do you have Stallone? The Boxing Hall of Fame.
Are you serious?
Adrian, yes. Yeah, so that's a classic.
Wow.
But you know, Tyson was the greatest, and had a crazy career, but for a period there, I've never seen anything like it. So, shout out to you, Mike.
Yeah, man. Props to Mike, man. Props to Mike Tyson. It's been a long road for that brother, man. He had a nice career starting out, and it was what it was, and it is what it is. But good to see that. I think that's excellent for him. Real Sports Guys Radio, we're going to sign off. Catch y'all next week. All right, man, we out.
Yeah. Well, we held it down for a few
hours.
I was a little bit under the weather because I'm going to be in here tomorrow under the weather.
Okay. Well, I couldn't tell, man. I couldn't tell. You did your thing.
Yeah, I was like, you got to play hurt. He called and said he couldn't do it. I said, oh, man, I thought I was going to be at a coast with three of us. I said, oh, you're going to try and make me pull a Jordan, huh? Try and play sick. Oh, my goodness. But
I feel like that was a good show. That was a good show.
Now, we didn't do your opening segment, the one that you used to do with the funky...
I didn't have anything. Like if I ain't got nothing, I'll just keep it moving. Okay. I didn't really have nothing that I felt was going to be provocative enough or interesting enough to do a whole segment on. So as you said, we just jump into it and see, you know, just let it go. I think that's the beauty of our show, is that we're versatile enough where, you know, we may get to talk about something and it turns into that anyway. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. I think that was some good stuff. I try to post some stuff up at my little thing. Put up on pings. I got it on our my little thing about LeBron, and so I'm gonna try to keep putting a couple things up throughout the week on our Facebook and on our Tumblr account, on our blog. Keep that stuff going. So I'm trying to get that back into that routine now.
Mm-hmm.
Try and post some things and keep the dialogue moving, but. But yeah, man, I was surprised. I just felt it. I was like, man, he about to go for 35. He might damn near triple double. You can see it.
Man,
that
he sure
happens.
Did, man.
You can feel it. You're like, man, this is prize fight. You know.
Yep.
You feel for a big fight. You know, like, damn, this is like Sugar Ray and Hearns up in here, people. And then it was just one of those quick ass knockouts. So I said, oh my goodness. I said, these Cleveland players clowning.
Yeah, man, it was definitely brought, man, and the Cleveland boys didn't even put up a good enough fight.
No, they didn't. He was all over the bench talking. I said, wow.
Yeah, see, that's where you take a dude out. You know, it's one thing to come in here and do your thing, but you start talking crazy. You start wanting, somebody should have stepped up and said, he going down. Next trip down court, he going to hit the ground. You know,
yeah.
If it started brawl, it started brawl, but he hitting that ground.
Yeah. Now he should have been yelling at Dan Gilbert, all that crazy stuff he said. He should. I hope he was. I think he was directing some stuff towards the owner's seats. That's what he said. But, yeah, he should have been yelling at Dan Gilbert, all that crazy stuff he wrote. I wish I'd have been down there because I know he had plenty to say to Gilbert.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big night. Boy, I just felt like, man, I felt like it was a championship thing in the air. And then they just, as I was watching, he just hit them with the body blow, breaking them down.
Yeah. Ooh. There's something I want to look into more, man, is that, and I'm going to try to build up a case. You know, I want to touch on this whole Darrell Wright, Michael Beasley, and how what prevented them from doing this last year? You know what I'm saying? Like, they're both having career years right now. And was it that they just needed to check? They just needed to get out of South Beach? I mean, what is it? I mean, because ain't much herb growing in Minnesota. I know that for sure. Not at this time of year. Whatever he could possibly smoke is frozen.
Yeah.
You know, out in Golden State, I mean, Wright is balling. And they could be doing this for Miami. I mean, it wasn't like Miami gave Beasley away. For a second round pick. I mean, this is number two pick in the draft, and they gave him away for a second round pick. And they just didn't even try and re-sign Wright. It's interesting.
Yes. I mean, these are two guys that could have helped you, gave you a little.
And they're young. And they're young.
You know, teach them how to win. So, yeah, I don't know if they had to clear cap room to make it work with Beasley.
Yeah.
And that might have been part of it. They felt like they could sacrifice him. But that might have been one of those deals, if you really understood he could produce like this, where you like, hey, we all take less money.
Yeah, he's still on his rookie deal. That's the thing about it. He's still on his rookie deal. So he was due like $5 million. I think they could have sucked that up, man. Go over the, I mean, that's your guy. Go over the, you know, it's just interesting. It's just interesting. So I'm going to look more into that and just see, kind of do some backtracking and see what kind of stories was coming out of Miami last year about those two. And especially around the summertime, if anybody else saw this coming, that these guys could possibly be key pieces that they let go. Because I think that's what, by the end of the season, that's going to be the story with this team, is what could have been if they had done it differently. You know, did they do too much gutting of their roster? Did they let things go too much?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that could be an interesting angle to pursue. With that Miami Heat team, did they let too many possible pieces, too many possible assets walk away, and now are they locked into a situation where they got three guys on max deals, and they really can't get the right pieces in?
One of the things I'm looking at thinking about doing is maybe, you know, beginning to access like the beat writers.
Mm-hmm.
So these are people that might be able to come on the show and do some stuff with us, and maybe somebody in the Miami area who's on a small paper who, you know, some of these cats are kind of people who know these things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, get them into our conversation.
Yeah.
You know, in these markets where, you know, they're not on ESPN and stuff like that, but they know enough to be writers. They know enough to provide us with some insight from that world over there. That might be.
And you know what, man? That's probably what we should be doing. Yeah. We should probably be reaching out to people who are at our level as far as exposure, but could grow, just like we could grow. And as they grow, we grow. And as those are the type of connections we need to make. You know, we need to be like Mos Def and Kweli and them back in the late 90s, where they licking up, and as Mos gets bigger, Kweli gets bigger, and, you know, everybody around them starts to get bigger. You know, they growing together, and that's probably what we should be doing. I mean, as our business model is reaching out to guys, up-and-coming writers, who ain't on ESPN yet, who don't have that name cachet, but we develop a solid relationship with them. You know, we give them an opportunity to do that thing on air with us.
That's right.
You know, and they bring stuff to our show with the hope that if they do get to that level, if they do become big, we have this connection, and we can continue to develop that relationship and have them coming on the show as this big wig, you know, 3-4 years from now. As this cat who has a name, who people see on ESPN, people see him on Fox Sports, people see him on NBA TV, and you know we have built some equity with this cat, you know, and they're willing to come on the show and do a segment with us real quick.
And one of the things through the travel club stuff that I'm doing, we have, you know, is access to the NBA All Star Weekend and stuff like that. That might be a model in which we could get into that space. There's tickets included in these packages in which we can also get into these spaces where we might be able to do a live show from the location. So there's some, you know, there's some things there that we can start to build on that might be a model to get us into these spaces where, you know, we're not at a point right now where we can get credentials to get there, but we can still be live and in color. So,
right.
And, you know, so, the, you know, and that's part of your business model here, you know, tax write-off and those things as well, because it's part of what you're trying to get done.
Right.
So there's a number of things we could probably put in place. But, yeah, we should be looking for those beat writers and, you know, those folks that we might put around table.
Yeah, I think one pretty solid source of kind of local guys is when you go to ESPN is that True Hoop blog.
Yeah.
It has a lot of local blogs for NBA teams. It just has a database of local blogs. And, you know, that could be a resource to tap into to get a lot of those local stories and just get some names to look up. I'm sure a lot of these guys have probably Twitter accounts or Facebook blogs and things of that nature, Facebook accounts, and maybe we can hook up with some cats through those avenues, you know.
And then we also have a Blood alum, you know, Casey Johnson, down writes for the Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a beat writer with the Bulls.
Okay.
So, I mean, we could work that alumni connection that, you know, I've reached out to Casey in a while, but you know, I could probably reach out to him and see if he'd be willing to, you know, talk to us a little about NBA beat and talk to us a little about what's happened with the Bulls and, you know, provide us with some insight as well. So, you know, sometimes, I don't know if Casey's reached a point where he might be under some kind of relationship with, like, the Score and some of these other places that are more local that he has to do. But, you know, again, like you're right, you know, between them and some bloggers, some other people.
Even if nothing else, he can give us some names of some up-and-coming cats that he knows who will be looking to, who look like they got a future in it and will be looking for opportunities to get their name out there and to, you know, get some exposure in some different markets.
Yeah. And then some other people who are kind of just out there who don't, who haven't, are still on the scene, but kind of outside looking in, like a Jason Whitlock, who's a big name, but he's not quite, I don't know who he's connected. Is he doing stuff with Fox or?
Yeah, I think he's, doing stuff with Fox Sports right now, which is why his stuff is a little bit weird.
because I know ESPN has some different kind of relationships, but maybe Fox might not put that kind of hold on somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not opposed to, may not be opposed to, you know, doing some stuff like that. But yeah, I'm agree with you on the, just finding those beat writers who would be very interested to have a conversation.
Yeah, I think it would be. I think that would be a big move for us to be able to get some of those cats in. Develop some consistent contact and relationships with those cats. Again, because as they get bigger, you know, we can get bigger. We can grow with them, and we can help them grow their brand just as we grow ours.
That's right. Well, we'll start working on it.
We just got to get names and get contacting people and see what we can get set up.
Okay, and there's also some cross-fertilization that we can do through Blog Talk Radio. Some people who are on some other shows we might be able to bring over as well. So, you know, there's a couple avenues there with folks who we can do some cross-promotion as well. So, you know, that's also something to think about as well for people who are already on Blog Talk Radio. So we can do cross-promotion. You know, with them as well. So there's a number of angles to do it.
Yeah. Cool, man.
All right. Well, get some of that sleep, man. I'm about to.
Yeah, you too, man.
Lay down and try to get better, so I don't, like, can't afford to get sick.
Yeah. I know how that is, man. You can't too many irons in the fire to get sick.
Yeah, that's it. Too many, man. So I'm gonna. I think I'm going to stay on tomorrow just to give myself a chance to get better.
All right, man. We'll do what you got to do.
All right. Get that family hug for me.
I will, man. Take care.
Right. Yep. Peace.
All right. Peace.